Welcome to Ivan's DC Update podcast version. As you all know, what we're going to try and do during the podcast is bring personalities, issues, people, and culture that help shape the way in which Washington, D.C. works, the city that we all love, live, and work at. Today, for our first topic, we are going to talk about the Hispanic, Latinx, Latino, we'll definitely define what we're going to call it. We're going to talk about their influence in Washington, D.C., and it's a growing influence. We have two guests today. We have Catherine Pereira from Hogan Lovells and Albert Morales from Latino Decisions. Let's start with Catherine. Catherine, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks for having me, Ivan. My name is Catherine Pereira, and I'm originally from Bogota, Colombia. I moved to the States when I was 9 and decided to study political science at George Mason University. After that, I found myself interning on the Hill for Congressman Tony Cardenas from California and served in his office for about 4 years. He's part of the Energy and Commerce Committee. And as you know, most important policy decisions like the spectrum and the sharing economy is going through that committee today. After that, I took a couple of years to work on foreign policy at the Atlantic Council, particularly on trade and U.S.-Mexico relations, and recently joined the Hogan Lovells team.
And we're lucky to have Catherine with us. So, Catherine, I guess just to set the stage for a broader discussion on the Hispanic influence in Washington, D.C. and the stakeholders that are driving that. So if you're sitting in my shoes or you're sitting in the shoes of somebody who is looking to influence, work with, solve a problem in Washington, D.C., why should you be paying attention to the Hispanic caucus?
The Hispanic caucus is a growing group of members, not only in numbers, but also in power, prestige, and influence on the Hill. There's about 36 representatives and 2 senators that make part of the group, varied with men and women from 13 states and territories, and one leadership position, Ben Ray Lujan, who's the assistant Democratic leader. We've also have Chairman Raul Grijalva from the Committee on Natural Resources, as well as Representative Grace Napolitano. She's the chairman of the Subcommittee on Water and Environment in the Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure. We know there's a lot to be done in that this time around and this year, as well as Lucio Roybal Allard on the Committee of Appropriations, chairing the Homeland Security Subcommittee. And we also have Alvio Cides on the Committee of Foreign Affairs, chairing the Western Hemisphere Subcommittee. You also have Senator Robert Menendez, the ranking member of the Foreign Relations Committee, as well as Senator Catherine Cortez Masso, the leader of the DSCC. So as you can see, there's just a plethora of committees that they're involved in and that they cover, and any issue that a client has, one of these members is probably sitting on that committee and willing to be helpful and willing to engage.
So what's the bottom line?
The bottom line is that in order to really get something done in Washington, you're going to need to get to know the members of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus.
Perfect. Thank you. So welcome back to the show. We are lucky to have Albert Morales, the political director of Latino Decisions. Albert, what is Latino Decisions? And tell us a little bit about your background in Washington, D.C.
Sure. Latino Decisions is the premier polling firm for the Democratic Party, who specializes on the Latino electorate. We've been around since 2007, so a little over a decade. I am based here in Washington and am the D.C. presence. I got my start in politics back in high school. I struggled at math, ironically. Now I work with numbers every day. And one afternoon, someone from Speaker Wright's office shows up in our government class talking about politics and what Congress did, something I had no clue of at the time, despite having had classes in government. And he said something that stuck with me. He said, politics is a simple game of addition. If you're adding people to your cause, you're winning. If you're not, you're losing. And a little light bulb went off, and I thought, I can add. And then he went on to say, if you enjoy talking to people, you'll be really good at this. I said, I can do that too. So I chased him out, out into the hallway, and next thing you know, I'm delivering groceries for my congressman. And that's all I've ever done. Even though I was a business major, I've been in politics all my career. And here some 20-something years later, I can't think of anything else I'd rather be doing.
Albert and I also were at the Democratic National Committee at the same time. So we are graduates of Chairman Terry McAuliffe's Hispanic Project. So that was a big part of my career. And it's fantastic to be back with Albert on our DC Update podcast. So, Albert, my first question to you, you got to settle this for everybody. Now that we have to figure out the Hispanic caucus, the Hispanic, you know, influence in Washington, D.C., I saw all the presidential, you know, candidates had to learn Spanish before the last debate. Albert, solve it once and for all. What is it? What's the right way to describe the Latino vote? Is it Latino? Is it Latinx? Is it Hispanic? Is it Spanish? What is it?
Well, with over 50 million Latinos in this country, you're not going to have a one-size-fits-all approach to this. I tend to stick with Latino or Hispanic to be safe. I'm sure there are others who are younger generations who may have a different take, and I think that's a debate that'll be ongoing.
Talk to us a little bit about the evolution of the Hispanic vote and what differentiates them. What are the fault lines on whether they see themselves as Republicans, Independents, Democrats?
Sure. And I think this is more of a geographical question as it relates to our community. Let's take Florida, for example. In South Florida, you have this growing, it really is a melting pot of Latinos from Central, South America, and Mexico. Cuban Americans tend to be more conservative, and you have your Puerto Rican voters in Central Florida who live in the Orlando I-4 corridor space who tend to be more progressive on some issues. Then you fly over to Texas, and you're in the heart of the Bible Belt country for Latinos, folks like my parents who are evangelical Christians. Now, they're very conservative socially, but they tend to favor Democrats on most issues, whether it's access to health care, job creation, immigration, you name the issue.
Second question, Albert. So is the Latino giant finally awake?
I think it's been awake for some time. It's only recently that the national political press has been covering it as effectively as they have. I'll give you a good example. There's a piece today in NBC News from John Allen, senior veteran reporter, who's already writing about the significance of Texas and California and how that will impact the outcome of a primary. Given the way the delegate selection process is, there are a lot of nuances out there that the average voter is not aware of. And unlike previous years where, you know, you could bank on the winner of Iowa taking it all, there's a very short window between Iowa and actually Super Tuesday when you're going to have Texas, California, a number of other states that are rich in Latino votes impact the outcome. And those who have the resources to make it to Super Tuesday have the added advantage. And in a crowded primary field like we have today where there are multiple candidates who can, you know, tally up enough votes to make it to the convention, you could even see a long and protracted fight on, you know, in Milwaukee.
So since you started talking about the presidential candidates in the presidential primary, Albert, who's doing well? Who's doing okay? Who's got the right ideas? Well, what do you see in the polling and the work you do?
Sure. I think right now what we're seeing is that name ID is playing an outsized role in the numbers. Someone like Vice President Biden obviously has the advantage, as does Senator Sanders, because this is not their first rodeo. You see Kamala Harris, given her performance in Miami. Her numbers, we saw significant mounts for her post the debate. And there are others. But one of the biggest challenges for a lot of these candidates is their local politicians. This is their first time on the national stage. So they have a lot of catching up to do. Because they just don't get as much media coverage. It's not to say that they don't have a chance to get there. They will. We have, 11 more debates to go. So anyone can really, you know, stand out on any given night. And don't sleep on a number of these candidates, whether it's Bennett, whether it's Gillibrand, whether it's whoever, you name the candidate. They have one breakout night, and overnight they become the internet sensation, and they're raising, you know, $10 million in the next reporting period, and all of a sudden they're alive again. And guess what? Iowa isn't for a long ways.
So if you're a House or Senate candidate, let's shift over to Congress, since that's how I make my livelihood. Why should the Democrats and the Republicans be focused on the Latino vote as far as who takes the majority in the House, who takes the majority in the Senate, and everything in between?
Sure. Let's start with the House. The House is probably the most talked about in this town because Democrats picked up 40 seats last November. And if you're a Republican and you're thinking about your reelection strategy right now, you're probably going to be talking about the economy and how favorable it is for Republicans. Well, guess what? Those 40 House members who lost last November ran on a strong economy, and that alone, and that just wasn't enough in some very safe Republican districts. Now, if you're a Democrat, you want to think of how you expand the map and preserve your majority. Brought a little chart with me, and let's stick to Texas. There's about 7 congressional districts where the Democrats fell shy of just 74,000 votes of picking these seats up. Texas 2, for example, the Democrats only lost by 19,000 votes, but guess what? There are 64,000 potential Latino votes on the table that were untapped. Texas 10, we lost by 13,000 votes. There are another 62,000 votes on the table that we just haven't touched. 21, 9,000. Then the list goes on, but the one that sticks out the most is probably Will Hurd's district, 23. There's a reason why he voted the way he did last week. He only won by 926 votes, but guess what? There are 217,000 potential Latino votes up for grabs. This does not include African-American and white voters. These are just the untapped Latino votes. So on the House side, if I'm Speaker Pelosi, I'm feeling pretty good about things, especially given the way the congressional ballot looks right now. On the Senate side, if you're Mitch McConnell, you have to make sure that Arizona is not in play. You've got to make sure that Texas definitely doesn't come into play in North Carolina. Those are 4 pickup opportunities for Democrats. You can pick up Arizona, North Carolina, Texas, and Colorado. That's 4 seats. We preserve New Mexico, and it's a different day come, you know, November, what, 6th?
So what's the bottom line, Albert?
The bottom line is every road now leads, whether it's the road to the White House, the Senate, or the House, it leads through the Latino vote. You know, we talked about this earlier offline, but I remember a day when you and I were working for Terry McAuliffe when there were 2 states that you could name that had a Latino influence that could impact the outcome of the presidency, and that was really New Mexico and Florida. Now you've got North Carolina, who has more Latino voters than Virginia. And Virginia is pretty much blue, and the list goes on. So a lot is transformed fairly rapidly.
Thanks for being here, Albert. And for those of you who are interested in Washington, D.C., keep your eye on this space. The Latino vote, the Latino stakeholders. According to Albert, more Latinos coming to Congress and more Latinos determining the majority in the Senate and who keeps the House. That's it. That's all. It's politics. It's Washington, D.C. It's the life we've chosen for ourselves. And now the outtakes.
Sir, tell me about your breakfast.
I actually fasted and I skipped breakfast because Ivan was supposed to take me out to lunch at a really nice restaurant. And then he canceled on me because his air conditioning was more important than my appetite. So if I seem weak, frail, it's this guy's fault.
True story.
That was true. Great.
Story.
Awesome.